You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is the incorrigible Charlene Schmidt.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well. It's good to see you again and podcast with you again week after week. How was your week?
My week was sort of slow, fast, and crazy, but that's kind of how it's going lately. How about you?
About the same, but one thing that I always look forward to is talking with you and also addressing the Star Trek Voyager fans.
Likewise. I know that once the weekend rolls around, I have some Voyager to watch, some notes to write, and some podcasting to do. It gives me something to look forward to as I trudge through the work week.
This is probably the last productive thing that I do before I start the work week. Like, after I'm done podcasting with you, I pretty much go to bed and binge watch something and then
fall
asleep.
What do you think I'm going to do after this? We're watching House of Cards right now, as we were discussing on the other side of the Ready Room.
If you can't binge watch Star Trek Voyager and you can't do binge watch Breaking Bad, definitely try House of Cards.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Char, now that we're here and right before we go into our lazy bit before our Mondays, let us talk about the topic for this week. Last week, we teased a little bit about costumes. And one thing that Star Trek is really known for is the elaborate costumes with either a lot of color or barely any color, depending on the mood of the episode.
Like, right.
You know, like if it's going to be a Neelix-centered episode, you know there's going to be lots of color. And if it's going to be like a Borg-centered episode, you know it's going to be a lot of gray and green.
Yes, yes.
Before we get into when we talk about our favorite costumes and our least favorite costumes, there is a person that we should talk about, and that's Robert Blackman.
Good idea, because he is the brainchild of most of these creations. I mean, he heads up the costuming, or the wardrobe department, I think is technically how they phrase it.
Yes.
This guy has made Trek wardrobes for pretty much forever, since TNG.
Yeah, he was involved with Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, Generations, First Contact, Insurrection, Nemesis. It's just insane how much he was involved with. Well, actually, just some of his designs made it into Insurrection and Nemesis, but I don't think he was directly involved with those last two movies. But this, if you think about it, this man has been working with costumes since the 80s for just Star Trek.
Yeah, most costumers don't have quite that steady of a career, but when you think about it, think about all the things that he had to create over, say, the 18-year period in which he was involved. You're going to come up with some brilliant stuff, and then sometimes you're going to fall a little short because it's really hard, I would think, to stay very creative week in and week out, trying to do something different every single week with a new alien.
See, that's the thing, is that even though we are going to talk about our least favorite designs, our least favorite costumes, we have nothing but respect for Robert Blackman, and he does stuff that we could never do in a million years. And so,
definitely.
We don't, like, people at home and people listening in your cars, we don't want you to think that we're knocking Robert Blackman when we talk about our least favorite designs or when we don't like something, because we're not. We have nothing but respect for the man. And he is by far an artistic genius. And the man has received 10 Emmy nominations and I think 2 wins.
Okay.
I think so. And I mean, that's just phenomenal. 10 nominations and 2 wins.
Mm-hmm. That is a lot.
That's just crazy.
And that's a testament to just how good the guy is. He really is a genius. And we're not just going to talk about the failings. We're going to talk about what we really love, too.
Absolutely. And as far as costumes go, not just in all of Star Trek, but specifically in Voyager, there is by far way more cool costumes and cool outfits than the ones that have fallen short.
I agree. Especially among the other Trek series. Sorry, TNG. Sorry, DS9. Voyager has more winners than losers, as far as the costuming goes. Now, if we talk makeup, that's another episode. But
yeah,
we're
absolutely
talking clothing, so we're going to channel our inner Joan Rivers critic here. Let's kick it off with a good one. What is a costume that really stands out as just plain, fabulous, awesome in your mind?
Well, the thing is with me, like, when I was thinking about this this task that we had for each other all week, it was really hard for me to pinpoint one costume that I was like, yeah, this one's amazing, or, you know, this one is the top of my list. This might be a cop-out for me, but it was easier to say this was a good episode because it had so many costumes in it that I really loved. And so what I'll do is I'll talk about an episode I really like, and then but I'll say this was my favorite one in that episode, or, you know, I'll talk about it in generalities here. So one episode that I thought was really good was False Prophets.
Okay. Yeah.
I really like that episode because I love the juxtaposition of the clothing, because you look at the Ferengi and they are gaudy even for Ferengi. I mean,
this is true.
It's insane. And you know, Blackman did it on purpose because, like, these are the only Ferengi in the quadrant, and, you know, like, they're showering themselves with wealth, and they have certain female servants around them wearing the littlest amount of clothing. Like, there's one bikini that shows nothing but underboob. Like, I don't know, like,
right.
I don't know what the fashion term for that is, but
I'm not sure, but it's whatever you can get away with the most for family-friendly TV, if you can even say that. I don't know, that walks the line, but they got away with it.
Yeah, and even the villager clothing, like there was no outfit that looked the same, like, but they did have the same kind of style. Like, vests were in, and they had kind of loose, like, MC Hammer pants and everything like that. But
right.
I'd say the outfit that pops in my mind the most is one of the Ferengi's outfits in False Prophets. I felt I can't remember which one it was, but he had this silver cape and this gold necklace, like a periwinkle jacket with with turquoise pants and these Aladdin shoes. You know, it was just
forgot about those. Yes.
Like, I know a lot of people say, like, oh, that's a horrible outfit. Well, yeah, it is. It is a horrible outfit, but that's why it's amazing, because it's perfect for the situation.
Right. It's supposed to be so bad it's good.
Yeah, exactly. It's all pastels and shiny fabric, and it just fits so perfectly.
Gaudy is the word for that costume. It really is.
Absolutely. How about you? I explained a lot for my first one, so what about you?
Okay, well, I kind of like where you're going with how an episode overall can have some fantastic costumes, and I've got some individual standouts from episodes, but then I've got entire episodes where everything is just done so incredibly well, and then, like you, I kind of picked out a favorite, so I've got to go with one of the most obvious ones, Bride of Chaotica.
That's at the bottom of my list, because I was going to try to save that for last, but I knew that you would hit it off first.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm going to jump right in here. All the costumes in this thing, it's fantastic, but I think what I'm going to do is pick Arachnia for the absolute best because of the attention to detail. I mean, if you look from head to toe, from the hair to those exquisitely long nails, and then the detail in the costume as well, the webbed collar. I mean, wow. That is amazing. I don't want to know how long it took to create that thing. It had to have been several hours.
I really like her outfit, too. And, you know, I agree with you. It's amazing. But for some reason, the outfit that I'm drawn to the most in that episode is definitely Dr. Chaotica's. Because it's just the headpiece that he has on, just that, like, that almost yarmulke-looking thing, and the lightning bolts that are on his chest, and just the design on the fabric where it's like this big robe, and his fingernails. I just felt, I don't know, it's just that grabbed me a little bit more than Janeway's. But at the same token, like you said, the detail is so ornate on hers.
Right. But I feel like his is, like, really freaking good as well. I mean, he's, like, a really close second. Mm-hmm. Just because he looks like the kind of villain you would see in these kind of really old-fashioned, goofy sci-fi movies. But that said, another instance of so bad it's good done right is the robot.
Yes, I like just how cheesy it is. You feel like if you touched it, you know, it might break.
You topple over.
Yeah, and it's just like everything about this episode. I mean, all the outfits in it, like even his henchmen, like the guy with like the gold helmet on, and just like the rivets alongside, and that whole like WWF belt that he had on.
Yeah, it's, I like the way you describe that.
Yeah, it's just like there's so many different textures and fabrics involved, and you could just tell that Blackman and his crew had such a fun time on this episode.
The whole episode, what really makes you feel like they nailed it is just the fact that everybody went all out on this one. You could tell, and everybody had fun while they were filming it. It's infectious. Yeah. Good stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, right. One thing that I'd like to talk about, since we both started off with some great examples, I would like to kind of go into something that was a little under par. And
okay.
One episode, and the reason why I can't really say one outfit in this episode, because every single outfit was the same in this episode.
Well, that happens a lot. We know that they're an alien culture because they're all wearing the same outfit.
Exactly. And I feel like Jerry Seinfeld even had a joke about this, where he didn't say Star Trek specifically, but we all knew what he was talking about. He said, he's like, whenever you watch a futuristic TV show or movie, you know, every single person, a part of that culture, wears the unitard, and it's the one color, and that's it. Every single person you meet has that one color unitard. And he's like, just imagine the time that it saves. You can just see that, like, the president of that planet says, okay, everybody, we're no longer doing outfits. We're just going to have the green unitard, and that's it. We, you know, if we're visited by aliens, we want to look like a team. We want to look like we're together.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is I think that came initially out of the fact that the original series had such a limited budget, they probably had no choice. But then it becomes this thing, right, where they almost always do this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, the episode I'm talking about is Time and Again.
Oh, boom. That was my first nomination for the less than decent. Why do you not like this one?
Yeah, it's a season one episode. It's the fourth episode. And then It's too early. It's too early in the game for them to be repeating themselves. Maybe not necessarily repeating themselves, but just repeating themselves in the episode where every single person looks the same. And it's all layered. They all are wearing this tunic type deal where it's either a dark yellow, like a mustard yellow, or a burnt orange, and then a moss green and a brown. It's all just variations of those colors in different layers. They look like a, you know, like a jello layered cake. You know, like
I was thinking candy corn myself.
Oh no, that's way better. That is way better. That is what it is. That is from here on out. That is the candy corn uniform. That is what that is.
I did not come up with that on my own. I was actually discussing this with Lori, who, of course, started the podcast with us, and she brought that idea about. And I'm like, yep, dude, you nailed it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just, it is so lame.
It is.
It's so lame.
And it's not even just how they are all essentially the same. You know what really bothers me about this costume is the weird corset-like thing that they're wearing. Have you noticed this?
It's like a tight, like, I don't want to say belt, but yeah, like, girdle on the outside that they're wearing.
Yeah. And like, especially for the ladies, it almost like doubles as an exterior push-up bra. Like, if you look how it fits on Janeway, that just cannot be comfortable. And it looks weird.
Yeah, it looks really weird. And I almost forget about it because it blends in so much with their color tone. Like, everything's just the same color tone over and over again.
Yeah, it's really bland, doesn't do anybody any favors. And then that corset, no thank you. So I feel like this was the first time they really kind of phoned it in, and like you said earlier, it was a little early for this.
It is too early on in the series. All right, well, do you have another example of a under par?
Okay, well, okay, yeah, I will I don't know if this is under par, but I just don't like it. While we're talking about an early season one episode, do you remember Kes's purple tunic that she wore in Time and Again? Where, like, it's got this really high neckline. It looks kind of weird on her.
Yes, no, I do remember that one. It's it's like two sections where she has purple pants, purple boots. Like, the pants are a darker purple, and then the top is this, it's a separate section where it almost, it's like her rib cage is riveted with a with a different fabric. Like, she's wearing a jacket but then cut off the bottom. Like a half jacket that doesn't have a zipper in the front. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really strange. It looks like a weird cross between, I don't know, one of Wesley's really weird sweaters from the early days of TNG, and then just, I don't know, Berber carpet. Like, I don't know. What really gets me is the cut of it. It just looks really odd on her. I don't like it. And again, I'm not some fashion expert, but I don't like it. The plus side is that it wasn't a cat suit. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't the form-fitting things that she wears pretty much the rest of the time. There is that advantage. But at the same time, I'm also glad we only saw this shirt, I think, this once.
Yes, I don't think... This one didn't bother me like it bothered you. Like, I just kind of thought, okay, you know, that's a weird futuristic Star Trek outfit. You know, like, I just thought, I guess, whenever she was standing next to Neelix, it was never as crazy as whatever he was wearing.
This is very true. You can't outdo Neelix.
I'm not even touching Neelix's outfits in this episode.
I think we should acknowledge this, because I intentionally left Neelix off of this list myself, and here's the reason why. It's, okay, some people really just think his fashion sense, or at least the outfits he was wearing, they were disturbed in some way, and oh, you could argue that, but at the same time, that is Neelix. That suits Neelix. He is a colorful, kind of goofy character. It suits his personality, and I'm not going to fault them for that.
Yeah, I. You know what? I like, if we're going to talk about it, let's talk about it then. And there was some times when he got a little crazy. There were some times when, you know, it wasn't... As we got on later in the season, they toned it down just a little bit, but they still stayed true to him. Mm-hmm. I felt like early on they wanted him to be a little crazy and really colorful, but you're right, it matched his persona, it matched who he was, and I think it just worked. I think it worked for Neelix, and I don't have any complaints when it comes to Neelix's outfit, because it's the 24th century, it's a different culture, it's a different quadrant, it's just. I mean, you can have characters that have crazy outfits, it's sci-fi.
Yeah, that's actually one thing I really did appreciate about him in those really early, like, especially the chef suit that's really multicolored that he's wearing. I think in The Clouds, starting then, and he brings it back quite a bit. Some people absolutely thought that was just, whoa, way too much. I don't think so. I think that was a reminder to us that this is different.
Right. Yeah.
That's not a bad thing, guys.
I think so, too, yeah. I think so. You're spot on. And
well, thank you.
I'm sure several people out there are just screaming at their iPods going, no, you're wrong. Neelix is a horrible character and he has horrible outfits. Well, put that energy into our forums at trek.fm/forums and let us know what you think of Neelix's outfits, and not just Neelix's outfits, but everything that we're talking about today. Let us know if you're agreeing with us, disagreeing with us, and post some examples too.
Yeah, we want visuals.
Yeah, we want visuals, and post your favorite costumes or your least favorite ones. Well, the one that I want to go into, and a lot of people are probably going to be like, really, this one? But the episode Muse.
Okay.
I don't really like this episode. I don't think it's very good. I think it's a very, very boring episode. If you think about it, the color palette in Muse is very drab. It's very low-key. It's a lot of gray, a lot of white, a lot of brown, and a lot of mud color, a lot of earth tones. If you look at the texture of these outfits and the detail, you have to really pay attention. But it's a lot of robes, but within those robes, you'll have three different patterns. You'll have a different pattern on the hood, you'll have a different pattern on the tunic, and you'll have a different pattern on the sleeves. And if you watch it on a small 13-inch television like I did when I was a kid, I know you probably didn't really notice it when you were watching it over the air, but you watch it on DVD or Netflix, you can see it a whole lot better. And even the cloak that they have B'Elanna wear it has very ornate stitching around the collar and around the chest that you don't really give a second glance. But it wasn't until I watched this episode recently where I was like, you know what? These are some great costumes, if only they put that much time and energy in writing the script.
Huh. I'm really glad that you mentioned this one, because to be honest, I never would have thought about it. And maybe it is just because it is such a bland color palette.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this now and look for this attention to detail, because it's been a long time since I've watched this episode, and quite frankly, I just don't remember that.
I didn't notice it for a very long time just because I was so tired of the episode. Every single time I watch it, it's an eye roll, but
yeah.
Seriously, like, we're going to post some pictures in the chapter art, and, you know, you guys, you can take a look for it, and also, you know, you can go to trekcore.com and check out the screen caps.
Mm-hmm,
and everything we're talking about, you can find online and also within our chapter art. So Char, give us another prime example of something that you love.
Okay, and as much as I cannot stand the scenario in which this exists, I think one thing that went very right about Janeway's Victorian Hollow novel was her costume.
Yes, I did enjoy the costumes in that. It was really hard for me not to bring that episode up along with Fairhaven.
I figured you would bring it up, Fairhaven.
Yeah, it's just, well, the reason why I didn't, and I'm not criticizing your choice, it's just the reason why I didn't is because I was trying to focus on original pieces, like cultures that didn't exist. You were absolutely right about the Victorian Hollow novel and things like Fairhaven, but specifically the Victorian Hollow novel. All those, even the outfits on the children, were pitch perfect. And they were absolutely appropriate for the time period and even for the personalities of each character that was in it. It just, you felt like, you know, bam, we're in a, it's like we were watching Jane Eyre. And it like, on Star Trek, though, it was fantastic.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I really love how it all just really hangs together. Like you said, spot on. Janeway's especially. I mean, you've got several layers going on here. You've got, like, the lace that you can see skirting out on the edge. There's, like, the plaid outer layer. She's got the vest underneath it. And then she's got that really funky hairstyle to go along with it. And I just feel like it really comes together well.
I think so, too. I think it was very appropriate for the setting.
Yeah, so as much as I hated it whenever we saw that on screen, at least I could appreciate that.
I think when we talked about the holodeck program episode, like when we discussed our favorite and least favorite thing, that is definitely my least favorite holodeck program. Like, if I had a holodeck, that would probably be the last thing that I would play next to going to the DMV holodeck Beta Alpha 2. You know, it just...
I like it. Yeah, you just wouldn't simulate that. Why in the world would Janeway do this? We will never know.
Like, totally want to be a governess in my free time.
I want to babysit bratty kids. Let's do that.
Let's do it.
You never mind that I run a ship constantly and I'm babysitting all these officers. No. I want these kids.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, while we're speaking negatively, let's take the downside again. And do you have one that you just think wasn't so hot?
There wasn't so much... anything that I was just like, oh, that's horrible. But one thing that could be really fun, that could have been really fun, was the episode Real Life.
Okay.
With about the Doctor's holographic family.
Mm-hmm.
It's drab, you know, and maybe it's supposed to be. Maybe you're not supposed to draw attention to the outfits. It's just, it felt more like a 90s sitcom than it did... you know, than Star Trek in the 24th century. It felt like if Home Improvement did an episode where they were trying to show the future, this is what you would see.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
But just like the daughter had just a pink dress with a white shirt underneath, and the boy just had like a Jake Sisko vest.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the wife just had basically the same kind of outfit that the daughter did, but just different colors. And I just felt we could have seen something different. I mean, but the thing is, the outfit that B'Elanna had on in that episode was really cool. It was really unique. You'd never seen it before, and it was understated. And I didn't really get that from the holographic family. And I just felt like it could have been a moment to shine to show 24th century human clothing.
Yeah.
They just kind of missed it.
Oh, you are absolutely right about this. Good job. it shows a great dichotomy, right, about how, like, in the future, you can have that understated look and have it look futuristic, but then it also has sort of that timeless quality as well. And you can do it either really well, like with B'Elanna's outfit, or just kind of eh with the rest of the family. And Jake Sisko outfits, that really kind of, that is the key word there. That reminded me so much of the weird things they had Jake wearing with the weird jumpsuits and all that. Yeah.
They probably stole it from Deep Space Nine, to be honest with
you. Maybe they did, yeah. I mean, Sir Rock Lofton had obviously outgrown it by then, so they just put it on this kid.
I would not be surprised if somebody told me, yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised at all. That's a very good call.
What about you?
Okay, I'm going to go with an interesting one. As I was perusing and doing research for our podcast, I came across one that when I just saw the image, I thought, what the F is Harry wearing in this episode? And this is the episode Prime Factors. It's got a kind of mosaic type pattern on one side, and then it's got layers of fabric that make it kind of look like it's in a horizontal stripe pattern on the other with the same material, but it just looks bad on him. It's a really stupid looking shirt. And it's not Harry's fault. It would look bad on anyone.
I'm pretty sure Picard wore this. I'm okay. There, it was. What episode was it, Char? It was okay. It's the episode where Beverly is wearing a dress at the end where it's this big poofy skirt and it's almost like crushed velvet on the top. They're drinking wine. What is that episode?
It's attached.
Yes. It's attached. That's what it is. It's like, yeah, they go that whole episode and then they wear 24th century civilian clothing. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Harry is wearing the same tunic as Picard.
I just looked at the screenshot of it. Whoa. It is the same shirt.
It is the exact same shirt. That's
that
so awesome.
Oh, that is awfulsome.
I love that you picked that one as a horrible shirt and that it would look horrible on anyone, and it in fact does look horrible on anyone, and we have an example.
Yes, I rest my case. If it looks bad on Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart, a man who is in great health, takes care of his body, he can't even sell this thing. So how in the world was Garrett Wong supposed to do it as Harry Kim? The guy didn't have a prayer. Nobody could pull this off. It is just an ugly ass shirt.
All right, well let's go to something good real quick. This is another thing that I'd like to talk about. This is kind of like Muse, where you probably don't think, oh yeah, these are great costumes, and that's the episode Resistance.
Ah, okay. I've got some notes on this episode. What have you got?
Hey, all right, cool, good. I'm glad we both came to that. It's there was so much variety in this episode. We're on an alien planet, we're in a bazaar. And so we get to see a lot of different people from different walks of life. And you have Janeway, who has a kind of a muted color palette, but she has kind of a cool tan jacket, like kind of not Burberry, but I don't know. It's got a nice brown collar and then, button things going down. And then you have Tuvok, who has kind of a checkered pattern outfit. And then you have B'Elanna, who has nice vertical brown and white stripes. And you have Neelix with his pimp coat. And
I like that pimp coat. That works for him, too. Yeah,
it's made of fur. It's like a leopard pattern. And it's totally something that you knew that he would wear, you know, back in the day when he was a trader.
Yeah. Only he could wear this, too. That's what I like about Neelix's outfit is, like, well, any of his outfits. Nobody else on the show could wear these things.
Absolutely.
Neelix, on the other hand.
And even then, like, the main bad guy, he has this cool layered tunic that has, like, a leather belt with a circle in the, you know, on his right shoulder. It's a clasp, and he's wearing black gloves. It's even though, again, with, like, just like with Muse, it has a muted color palette, but very cool textures and very cool designs.
Yeah. I think my favorite outfit, aside from when Janeway kind of decides to, you know, mock or to pose as a prostitute, where she hikes up her skirt a little bit. She plays that really well. The scarf really is a nice accent with that outfit. Mm-hmm. The one I like the most, though, in that episode is B'Elanna's. Who knew that she could work stripes?
Yeah, she looks good in stripes. And I feel like B'Elanna has some of the most consistently good clothes, in my opinion. I mean, even just in our conversation tonight, We've been bringing her up about how a lot of her clothes have been really understated and really classy, and it just adds to the awesome that is B'Elanna Torres.
Right. Plus, she also has the very fashionably mid-90s kind of leather pants that, well, frankly, all the Maquis wore. And I'm sorry, that's hot.
And that hip half jacket, that red leather half jacket that she wears. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. That is good-looking stuff. I actually love the Maquis attire just in general. I think Chakotay looks great in it. B'Elanna looks great in it. Even in worst-case scenario, Seska, she rocks it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
I think there's a lot of great texture in Voyager. I think there's a lot of great... They don't just rely on the futuristic shiny or the TNG iridescent, you know, fabric that was used in every other episode. It was a lot of varied colors, a lot of... Like, they were okay with being understated. They were okay with being muted. But then there was aliens that were just like Neelix and just over the top and, you know, really colorful and off the wall.
Yeah.
Well, we're running low on time here. So, Char, do you have, like, a end-all, be-all, your absolute favorite costume that was introduced in Voyager? Because I do.
You know what? I'm going to go with maybe an understated choice, because that seems to be the word of the night. How about Seven of Nine in a blue uniform? Bam!
Yeah, I have to say, like, that's a, you know, as simple as it is, it's, you know, it's the Voyager uniform, it's the Deep Space Nine uniform, early Deep Space Nine uniform, and Seven rocks it. She does.
Well, I mean, we all know Jeri Ryan is a knockout. She doesn't have to wear a cat suit to prove that. She looks great in a real uniform. So why could she have not stayed in it? That's my be-all, end-all. What about you?
Well, it's really funny that you brought up a uniform as your end-all, be-all, because so is mine. It is the flight suit that they introduced in the episode Drive.
Okay, yeah.
It looks like it had a lot of influence from the First Contact uniforms, where it has the white top with the red piping, and then a gray chest and black on the sides and underneath the arms and the black pants, and it has, you know, like Velcro connectors and like these tabs that you can rip off and put back on. And Harry looks great in it. Tom looks great in it. B'Elanna looks freaking amazing in it. And it was just like, I wonder if they... Like, if they had a flight suit, you know, on record, like, oh, yeah, this is the Starfleet flight suit, or it was something that, you know, Tom designed because he's like, yeah, we totally need these because it's awesome and I want to fly.
Yeah, this is one of those things where it looks futuristic and it's sleek and it's awesome, but it's not really out there. Like, it's a natural projection of what you could say, oh, yeah, in the future, totally.
You could see a Formula One racer wearing this, like, if they didn't have to whore themselves out with companies and sponsors and advertisements, you could totally see somebody wearing this in a race car.
Yeah. All right. I think on that note, it's time to start wrapping things up. But before we totally get out of here, we've got an iTunes review to acknowledge, because we have a new one. And this is from KJaneway8. And she says that she's very thankful for the show. She loves hearing our views on the characters and the episodes. And she's also got a special thing for you, Tristan. She's a little concerned about you. She sort of is a little worried about your obsession with the monkey. She says it's not right. And even though she is very much a diehard Janeway Chakotay relationshipper, she can't handle the monkey.
You know what? If you see her, or next time you see her, you tell her to mind her own business, because my relationship with the monkey is between me and the monkey. That's all I got to say.
All right. We will leave that at that. But we don't have just iTunes reviews. We discovered from a Twitter user, right? Who was that?
His name's Philip Clark, also known as @ABC's Dad. That's ABCS Dad. And he brought it to our attention. He said, he's like, why don't you do Stitcher reviews? And I was like, I didn't know Stitcher had reviews. And
that just
shows you, I mean, like, we were not trying to avoid you guys, like, who are Droid users and who can't go to iTunes or can't use iTunes or anything like that. If you use Stitcher, we apologize. We were not intentionally excluding you. And we have 4 amazing reviews on Stitcher. And what's really funny is that KJaneway8 not only gave us a review on iTunes, but she also gave us a review on Stitcher a month ago. And
oh,
we also
nice.
Have Bookworm 8, Beaver, and Vila 550. All of them gave us 5-star reviews. And
woohoo!
Just talking about how, you know, like Bookworm 8 said, you know, like a Voyager is one of his favorites. And so they enjoy our podcast. They appreciate listening to us. And they love that we analyze the episode. And Beaver has talked about how they love the interaction between the two of us. And that he told us, or he or she told us, keep up the out of this world job. And
wow.
Vila 550 kept it simple and said they really like to listen to us. And we have awesome discussions. So people,
cool.
Thank you so much for giving
yeah.
us these amazing reviews. I mean, we're gonna check back on Stitcher as much as we can, and we're gonna check back on iTunes. But please, as we always say, if you do write us a review, give us an email or find us on Twitter like ABC's dad did, and we will definitely give you a shout out.
Most definitely. And thank you so much. I'm feeling the love through the interwebs. How about you?
I'm feeling it right now, and it feels good.
Awesome. Well, as awesome as this whole show has been, costuming and positive reviews are not the only thing that we've been discussing on Trek FM, so here's a little preview of what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Marathons for new viewers.
If someone were to say to my 13-year-old self, here is every single episode of Star Trek ever made, I just don't know what I would do. I honestly think I probably wouldn't appreciate the shows as much as I do because they'd be so disposable.
Earl Grey.
Death Bowl and Hollow Pursuits.
Did he override anything or did he actually just walk
no.
right in?
No, he just hit the button. He just went boopity boop boop.
The Ready Room.
Yahoo with Mark Cushman.
But he's standing outside this building talking to Val. And there was this one point in the script where the writer wrote, Val reacts to what Kirk said, and Bob Justman in his memo said, I'm sitting here trying to imagine how a building is going to react to what our Captain Kirk says.
The Orb.
Runabouts.
It definitely feels more like the Old West. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're basically in a covered wagon instead of, like, a train.
But so. A covered wagon that can go warp 5.
To the journey!
You on Voyager.
You know, you got the chocolates and the roses and, you know, the
I'm
puppies.
I'm not talking about
like
the puppies.
Yes.
Someone had to do it.
I'm not talking about the puppy. Warp 5.
Malcolm Reed.
It almost feels like the writers thought it was fun to just keep throwing facts in and dialogue about him. You know, usually in the show Bible, you want to see people do things, and they just say, oh, we'll have this person say this. We'll have a whole episode about how he loves pineapple, but he's allergic to it.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Hewitt Wolf Recap.
So it was like Three Amigos or Galaxy Quest, but with Anne Rice?
I think it might have been. I could be wrong about that. I don't know.
That sounds,
you know,
equally amazing and horrible.
Melodic Treks.
Dick Fontaine and DS9's Jazz.
In 1983... Darren was offered the role of Jim Corrigan on ABC series TJ Hooker. The part of Hooker, as many of you will know, was played by none other than William Shatner or Captain James Tiberius Kirk.
Literary Treks.
The Insolence of Office.
But Starfleet's a military organization, and when you sign up for Starfleet, you're joining that group, and I think that you give up some of your rights in that situation.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out every show that we have. We have new Trek coming to you every single day of the week with a new show. And we are virtually on every single platform that you can think of, regardless of your device. You can find us, or if you'd prefer, make it simple and go to trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory, and you can find everything right there. So let's take a short little break and talk a moment about our sponsor.
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm. What we're going to talk about next week is Season 4 Marathon. Char and I are going to talk about our top 5 episodes for that season to watch in a marathon. We're not talking about the best 5 episodes from Season 4. We're not talking about our favorite 5 episodes from Season 4. We're talking about what would be cool to watch in a lazy Saturday afternoon. But until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!